Hey folks, welcome to the Smoking Tire Podcast. Today's episode is brought to you in part by the Blackview Dash Cam Range, and today it's the DR900X Plus, their 4K ultra high resolution front camera, and Sony Starvis sensor in the rear camera. You can be sure that you will capture all the important details during the day and at night. Nothing is more important than having video proof in case of an accident. As a screenless compact camera that hides behind your rearview mirror, the Blackview is managed from the Blackview mobile app. With Blackview's seamless pairing, connecting with your Blackview app is a breeze. No need to enter pesky passwords anymore. Just wave your hand near the camera to confirm it's you, and the app will let you browse recorded videos, change settings, or connect your dash cam to the cloud totally effortlessly. But what about when you're away from your car? Well, with built-in voltage monitoring, you can have your car protected by Blackview's parking mode without fear of draining your car's battery. And thanks to the optional LTE connectivity module, the Blackview DR900X Plus Series dash cam keeps you always connected to your car from anywhere. This means you can receive impact notifications on your phone, check on your car with remote live view, and rest easy knowing that live event upload saves impact footage in real time to the cloud, including the all-important 5-second pre-impact buffer. The mobile hotspot function allows you to turn your LTE connected dash cam into a Wi-Fi hotspot for up to 5 devices. The DR900X Plus series is available now in 4 versions, with the front camera only or paired with a rear camera, an infrared interior camera, or an AI-powered driver monitoring camera. So go to blackview.com/TST. That's BLACKVUE.com/TST. And use the promo code TIRE to get 10% off any Blackview dash cam and free shipping for orders over $200. That's BLACKVUE.com/TST. And use promo code TIRE. Brought to you in part today by ButcherBox. You know what I love about ButcherBox? Meat. That's it. Don't have to go very far. Meat. I love meat, love cooking meat, love eating meat, and I love when meat shows up at my house. So add some power players to your grilling lineup this summer, which with ButcherBox. It's the subscription service that delivers high quality meat and seafood right to your doorstep. Choose from a carefully curated selection of 100% grass-fed beef, free-range organic chicken, wild-caught seafood, and more. And right now, new subscribers will receive a free grilling bundle in their first order. I love me a ribeye. I love to go reverse sear in my little It's a little Breville like toaster oven thing. It's just a toaster oven, but I go reverse sear 240 in the toaster oven for about 30 minutes until I get a 125 to 130 internal temperature. Then I sear it with some garlic, rosemary, and butter in the pan about 2 minutes aside. Bam! Shit is so fire, and my wife and I love it. And I love ButcherBox because it's just bringing that meat right to me. So that way I come home from work, take something out of the freezer, I put it right on my granite countertop on my kitchen, and that actually helps it thaw evenly. I used to do that bowl of water thing. That doesn't really work as well. Just throw it on the granite countertop or in a cast iron pan, and that'll help it thaw out. It's really nice. ButcherBox, their meat has no antibiotics or added hormones, packed fresh and shipped frozen for convenience. And you can customize your own box or go with one of theirs. Either way, you get exactly what you want. Plus, it's an unbeatable value at less than $6 per meal on average. Here is the deal. Wow, free bacon for life? Free bacon for the life of your membership, plus $10 off. Sign up at butcherbox.com/tire and use code TIRE to get a pack of free bacon in every single box for the life of your membership, plus $10 off your first order. That's butcherbox.com/tire and use code TIRE to claim this deal. Free bacon for life, that is like, that's SEO gold right there. That's a perfect promo. I'm going to go home tonight. I'm going to make bacon fried rice with my ButcherBox bacon. I got the Kenji Lopez Alt Walk Book, and the bacon and egg fried rice looks epic. It is going to be so delicious. ButcherBox.com/tire, code tire at checkout. Of course, we're brought to you today by SoFi. Investing can be real confusing. I don't know that much about investing unless it's land or Lamborghinis. You feel me? When people start using terms like shorting a stock, meme stocks, crypto, I don't really know what is up. So getting your money right is easier than ever with SoFi. It's the first investing platform to offer stocks, automated investing, and even crypto all in one app. It is really easy. I made my account in under 20 minutes, connected my financial institutions, and I was ready to invest within one day. SoFi has no commissions on trading stocks, no account fees, no hidden fees. You can even use fractional shares that start as low as $5 to buy brand name stocks, even if you don't have a couple grand lying around. They've got complimentary financial planners on staff and ready to help with any questions, whether you're stuck on where to start or need help deciding on what to do next. You can even save for your retirement with traditional Roth and SEP IRAs. You can get hands-on with active investing or let SoFi's number one ranked automated investing tool take the stress out of building and managing a diversified portfolio by doing it for you. You can set goals, either it's quarterly, annually, or retirement, build up to a down payment on a home, etc., etc. So cut through the jargon and make investing easier with SoFi. Visit SoFi.com/tire to learn how you can win up to $1,000 in stock when you open an account. That's SoFi.com/tire. Brokerage and active investing products offered through SoFi Securities LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. Last but certainly not least, we're brought to you by Off the Record. My favorite app to have on my phone is the Off the Record app. That way, I have confidence if I get pulled over by the police in one of their revenue-generating strategies, right, where I'm doing a couple over and they need to make their quota for that month, I don't want to be involved in that system. I don't want my insurance to go up. I don't want to go to court. I don't want to pay fines. That's where Off the Record comes in. You can go to offtherecord.com/TST or download the Off the Record app and use code TST10 on the Off the Record app. Never plead guilty to those tickets. Send them to Off the Record. Off the Record will pair you with a qualified, successful attorney in your area who will fight those tickets on your behalf. You won't even have to go to court or really, honestly, even do anything. They'll make sure to get those points off your record. And if they can't get the points off the record, they got a money-back guarantee in place there. Off the Record covers 97% of American drivers, and you can find out for yourself by going to offtherecord.com/TST or by using code TST10 on the Off the Record app. I have personally used them several times to get me out of tickets, and I have never so much heard a peep about them later. Once I sent it to Off the Record, I knew it was handled, over, and done with, and I get a lot of emails from folks who say they used Off the Record and are super, super happy with the kind of service that they provide, keeping those points off the record. Don't plead guilty. Don't let your friends plead guilty. Tell them about offtherecord.com/TST. Hey, folks, it's a crew show today. We got a lot to talk about. The HRE Open House was this past weekend. I'm going to tell you what was going on down there. Talk about learning about mechanical keyboards. Boy, was I into that. Went through, finished Tom Segura's new book, I Like to Play Alone, Please, and that is going to be a book review. We're going to talk about the upcoming Pikes Peak shenanigans this week, decisions to help my father spec out his new Porsche, and a whole lot of questions from you guys. It's another crew show on the Smoking Tire Podcast.
Did I just see a $600,000 Resto Mod Beetle?
Oh, yeah. I want to click on that. I saw that going on Twitter,
You know how much of a fucking nope that is? I mean, that's the fucking hardest. I did just see the Pro Drive thing, the $600,000 22B thing by Pro Drive.
They made another one?
They're singerizing the Subaru, you know, 2.5 RS.
Oh, good, because those were pretty cheap. Yeah. 22B was not expensive.
Right.
Wow.
I don't. I mean, it's like a, you know, it's like a 400 horsepower engine and a sequential gearbox, and it's the P25. That's it. Subaru 22B Restomod. Carbon fiber body. I mean, it looks great. Does look great. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. Just diving right in. Little crew show today.
Oh, it's carbon body?
Okay. Yeah, it's a carbon body. That's how, I mean, that's really how you end up, you know, that's how you get the Restomod from 250 grand to like the 500 to 600. Same thing with that Volvo that I posted on Instagram, the Cyan
right.
P1800. You know, without the carbon body, you're talking about 250 to 300, still a lot of money, you know, if you totally re-engineer the car. But then if you're talking about doing a carbon body for, you know, fewer than 100 cars.
Right.
That's how you
wow.
have to.
All right. That does transform the vehicle quite a bit. Wow.
It must weigh. Yeah, it says ProDrive is targeting a weight of under 1,200 kilograms. The original weighed in at 1,270 kilograms.
Well, hopefully they do better than 1,199.
Yeah, and you know I do mean? Have to say, cutting out 70 kilograms, that doesn't seem that hard. I mean, it seems like there's easier ways to do that than a carbon body.
Well, depending on the seats that are in the car, it can be very easy or difficult, yeah.
Well, the original car did not have power seats, right. So that would have been a very easy way to do it. It had manual seats, though. Maybe it's harder. I don't know. Maybe it is harder than I thought.
Well, I think the lighter the car is, the more challenging it is to remove a considerable amount of weight, you know.
I mean, I guess the 22B, like the 2.5 RS probably weighed more. The 22B already, I think, had some composite panels, right? I think that wide body kit was lighter than normal.
Well, like with the new M3, you know, CSL, everyone was kind of poo-pooing it because it's only shedding like 80 kilograms or something yeah. like that. Like, not a lot. And it's like, yeah, if you remove heavier seats or sound deadening, you can get that
pretty
entirely,
easily. Yeah. Subaru 22B. It doesn't, well, left. We'd have to
this
do some
hard
more digging.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, look, ProDrive knows how to make a car.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they know how to make a race car, I should say. I don't know what examples where ProDrive has tried to, you know, like upgrade an interior, for instance.
True.
It's not to say they can't. They could certainly hire experts to do that. But like, I wouldn't go to ProDrive to have my interior redone. I'd go there to build a race car.
Yeah, I mean, what's cool is, you know, they were the manufacturer or whatever shop that built like the rally cars, the world winning championship cars.
Right. They know those cars. I mean, they know how to get the performance out of those cars. Unquestionably.
But I think it adds some provenance, too, to the price, where unless it's Joe's new shop, we swear we're amazing at this.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, Cyan Racing, though, they came out of the Volvo Racing program.
Yeah, that used to be Polestar Racing until Polestar became an EV company. So they're not out of nowhere. In fact, when they brought that Cyan thing to Malibu, one of the guys who was with it was like, I remember you. And I was like, have we met before? And he was like, no, I don't think we've met before. But I remember you drove a Volvo C30 with the Polestar tune. And he said, and it was one of the low points of my career. And I was like, really? I was like, the car wasn't great, but it wasn't that bad. And he was like, you know, at Polestar, we wanted to make this whole, you know, re-engineered vehicle. And they basically limited us to blue and an ECU tune. And you tested it and like said the brakes were soft and the suspension was soft and it had like all season tires on it. And I was like, yeah, I do remember that being disappointing because it looked so cool and the blue really did make a statement and the power was nice, but there wasn't really much else to it. And he said, yeah, you know, we wanted to build a complete package, but they didn't want that. And I remember your review was particularly honest about its shortcomings. And I was like, well, don't take it personally, man. You know, it's a long time ago. And he said, oh, no. And then it was okay. And then, you know, the next couple of years, they did the S60 Polestar, which had giant brakes and Olin shocks. And he said, you know, they let us do more there. And we made a much more a performance-oriented car, you know, afterwards. And so we came back from that, and I did like that car. I thought that was a really neat car. Mm-hmm. But he said, yeah, that C30 was like kind of the low point in my career at Polestar. And I was like, ooh, sorry, man, like nothing personal, you know. But now they have this Restomod P1800 with a carbon body and 400 horsepower and I don't remember if it was Quaife or Wavetrack made the diff, and it was like a Hollinger, you know, 5-speed dogleg gearbox. And
right. Now the artists have all the paints.
Yeah. And there's $700,000, which sounds insane. But they said they've sold 5 of them already. It's obviously not insane. It's obviously just insane if you don't have $700,000.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, it's gorgeous. It's a really pretty shape. It always has been. And now it just has all this, like, modern hardware.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
Yeah. I wish they went with, like, a little bit more of a vintage wheel. It has, like, literally the wheels off of the new, you know, V60 Polestar or something, which I get on the one hand because it's got giant brakes off the current car. And you need some kind of wheels to fit the brakes underneath. But I think, you know, it was a little bit more, a little bit, it's on my Instagram if you wanted to see it, Cyan Racing P1800. You know, it has very, you know, when you take an old car and put these brand new center locking wheels on it, it takes you out of that. I think,
yeah,
I do think in, you know, not to always land back on Singer, but one of the things that when you see a Singer, you don't immediately go, you know, that was built this year.
Right.
You know, is that old? Oh, no, wait, it's not, you know, so.
Because this, we're looking at the photo, like, it's a white P1800 by Cyan. You know, the graphic on the lower part would be a little giveaway, but the shape in general, you just go, oh, okay, that's just a smart looking P1800. But like you said, the wheels,
yeah.
Suddenly look—they're from a different era.
Yeah,
yeah.
So, and that's just my aesthetic choice. We're going to be driving it in 2 weeks. So far, the people who have driven it have been very impressed. It's 400 horsepower. It's 2,200 pounds.
Whoa!
Turbo 4-cylinder. It has the goods. You know, it has all the thing, and the Cyan builds the race cars, so they know what good is.
Yeah.
It's double wishbone front and rear.
That's amazing. And they've won a bunch of races with their race cars. Like, they're not just a race shop.
No, they're good at it.
Yeah, they're very good at it.
And, you know, and of course, I asked them the same thing that a lot of folks have asked them, which is, can you do the wagon? You know?
Yeah.
And they said, yes, they can. It would cost a lot more money. Basically, they need, you know, because it's a carbon body, right? So they have the core funding to make these molds for the carbon. To make the wagon molds would be a different thing entirely.
Yep.
And also it would weigh more because it has more glass. It has a long roof and more glass. This coupe body is the lighter choice of the two, and that's why they did it.
Yeah, I mean, they would have to make, you know, the wagon a different roof line, different fenders. I mean, half the car is going to be needed a different mold for that carbon. And I don't even know if there are seams between the roof and the A-pillar. It looks like there's not.
They're not.
So it might be one giant mold. Wow.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how those fit together. But if there's a photo of the engine bay, it's amazing. They've hidden all the wires. It's one of the cleanest engine bays you'll ever see. Like what the very high-end shops do with the Porsches, you know, whether it's Gunther or look at that interior. I mean, that's exceptional. You know, whether it's Gunther or Singer or whatever, the engine bay is totally clean and clear of clutter. There's some real alliteration there from your boy. Clean and clear of clutter. The gauges are a vintage look, but they're all brand new and electronically controlled. On my Instagram, there is an engine shot. If you scroll back a week or two, wherever it was, keep going. There it is. It looks very good in this blue, but if you scroll to the right, you get the engine shot. The center exhaust is awesome. It's got a real Abarth vibe. Look at that engine. I mean, that's just fantastic looking. It's a turbo, but with ITBs also.
Yeah, that's really cool.
It sounds the business. When they fired it up, it sounds rowdy. And it's because it's pre-75. You can register it in California. No smog problems. none of that stuff. I think this one was a 71 or something like that.
Wow, man!
But they
so
do
cool.
start with, you know, they start with a proper VIN number from a from an.
It's a good looking engine, like considering it's a modern engine. You know, the ITBs, but then you like the airbox is, you know, quite far away, which looks really rad, and then you have this exposed like cam gears.
The airbox reminds me of like a vintage Alpha or something, like a GTV.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool. And they've really hidden all the wiring and stuff, any all the ugly stuff they've hidden, and all the cool looking stuff they've left.
Yeah.
Which is a strategy that really works for me.
Yeah, the wheels just stand out. It looks a little bit like a monster truck. It's just a bit for the big brakes. It looks it's sitting a little high, but
and for 700 grand, like we could come up with a, you know, if a different set of wheels made it 720, you know, who of your market is not going to care, you know?
Right.
I learned at Hypercar Invitational a couple weeks ago that for the target customer of this, the little things that would change the price do not fucking matter. It's the market is, it bothers me as a progressive, but for the customer, as a fan of cars, for the, you know, if you want to spend high six figures or seven figures on a car, there has never been a better time.
I wonder how many, like, did HRE have a lot of center locking wheels or any, like, they sell or make? I'm wondering
they
how many.
They make stuff for Porsche, for, you know, GT cars that have center locking wheels. You can get that. And actually, I discussed with Patrick because the HRE open house was last weekend. And they've paid me for my appearance in wheels in the past. But I've now done it. I only took them up on that twice, and I've done it five times. So we have two IOUs going.
Mm.
I don't need two sets of wheels, just one really nice set of wheels. And so we're going to do a set of wheels for my Porsche.
Right.
So rather than spend money having demand powder coat the stock wheels, we're going to do a set of these really lightweight wheels that look very similar to the stock wheels, that they have a finish that's like, it's like light bronze or something.
Cool.
That's going to look really, really good. I think it's, I want to say it's like the P101 or something like that. My friend Ryan has them on, I think it's P101. Is that right? Yeah. P101 series P1. Yeah. That's the wheel, forged wheel, very light, works for Porsche GT cars. Pretty sure that's it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Oh, hello.
Aggressive chat.
Hello, aggressive help chat. So that there's a direct fitment, same size as stock. You don't upsize these types of cars.
No. Yeah, that's
so
right.
They do make a center locking.
Okay.
They do make a center locking wheel for GT cars though. So they could make something for this. So anyway, that's that. But the HRE open house, it was this past weekend. First time out there. They, you know, 2 years they didn't do it for COVID, so this was the first time back. That picture doesn't do it justice at all. That whole area was full of cars.
Yeah, it's always slammed, right?
Yeah, it's slammed. There was hundreds of cars and thousands of people. Really cool stuff. I saw I wanted to take a picture. The coolest car I saw there, I wanted to take a picture of, and I went around the back. And the back of the car was like covered in fucking Blue Lives Matter shit. And the guy who was fucking wiping down the wheels was wearing a Trump DeSantis 2024 hat. And I put my fucking phone away and I'm like, I'm not taking a picture of this. But it was a first gen Audi S8, manual converted, slammed on bags with nice wheels. And at first I was like, that is the fucking jam. It's too bad such a tasteless person was driving such a tasteful car. You know, your requisite supercars and all that. I saw a couple old Volkswagens, like, you know, 80s GTIs and GLIs on period HREs, which was really, really cool. And actually, I was kind of obsessed with this. There was a guy who had a display of mechanical keyboards that he sells. I've never gotten into the mechanical keyboard. Yeah. So we had like vintage keyboards from like the Apple II era and like from the IBM 80s era. And then he had like brand new mechanical keyboards that they'd either like 3D printed or like built. And they had one that weighed like 20 pounds. It was like fucking a brick.
So he has the Cyan Racing of keyboard, which is the new one that looks old.
Yeah.
And then he has the old one that's actually old.
And like the old one's like an Apple II keyboard that like with a dongle to connect it to this laptop would be like $600. And then like a brand new like crazy one that feels kind of like the old one but is like machined would be like a couple $1,000s.
The machine one, like if they make it custom, okay. But yeah. Like I wonder how many Apple
It had like laser engraved shit on the bottom of it.
You can just find on eBay right now, like $600. You know what? My keyboard, I'm really happy to
and they had,
a fuck.
They had boxes of rubber gloves. They wanted you to put on gloves before trying it, which I kind of respect. Mm-hmm. I respect that hustle. But I was really, there was literally this table of mechanical keyboards next to a Bugatti Devo. And I gave the Bugatti like a quarter second of a glance before being like, let me type on these. They were very satisfying.
All right. Well, I thought that that person may have been, you know, puffing their prices.
Right there,
bit.
That one on the left. Yeah, $387.
Used
vintage Apple mechanical keyboard, yeah. See the 1991 ones. That one's in like real shitty condition.
Yeah, $50.
Yeah, like if you want like a pretty mint one, that looks like almost new. It's hundreds and hundreds of dollars.
That's amazing.
And there are dongles that can make them work with modern.
Oh, of course. Like here's an old Apple computer system.
Yeah.
That is almost $2,000.
Yeah.
And what can you do with it? Almost nothing.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's extremely collectible.
All right.
I'll be honest. It was very satisfying to type on. My job is a lot of typing.
Yeah.
But
it
if
is.
My job was even more typing.
You just like the
it was incredibly satisfying.
I think when I've used it, I've had fun with it for like 2 minutes.
Maybe.
And then the person near me that was using it, like they were typing a lot, and I went, "That's fucking loud."
Yeah,
like it's a little loud.
Yeah.
So
if you weren't by yourself, you could easily bother somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. Know? Exactly.
But that was incredibly rewarding. And HRE open house is always fun. It's a lot of money for charity. You know, they give away sets of wheels and stuff. They don't call it a raffle anymore because raffles you have to pay to enter, and it's an opportunity drawing.
Oh,
no purchase necessary.
Okay.
But, you know, it's always fun to get on the mic and give away, you know, a $20,000 set of wheels to somebody.
Heck yeah.
You know, especially when the guy's car is worth less than the wheels. Like the dude was going to get, the dude had like a Nissan 300ZX, which is a nice car, but he was about to put wheels on the car that were definitely worth more than the car.
Hey, that's amazing.
Yeah,
way to level up without actually having to buy a different car.
Boss. And I drove the M3 down there, which is the furthest I've driven the M3 since I bought it. I mean, what a nice car. I mean, if you got to do 120 miles each way on the freeway, you know, what a nice car.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not, with the exception of not having Bluetooth, which is something I'm going to sort very soon because there's a dongle and it is going to get, I should have it in a week or two. With the exception of not having Bluetooth, there are zero things about that car that would indicate that it was not built this year. Push button start.
Yeah.
The fact that it's a key and the fact that there's no Bluetooth are the only indicators that really... You know,
yeah, I mean,
it's not
like
a
the
brand
gauges
new
might look a little older than what's currently, but I agree with you. You know, the build quality holds up really well in those things.
There's no
in the interiors,
no downgrade whatsoever. Because the last few years when I've gone to HRE, I drove the Safari, which was cool, but it's an old car.
Yep.
I drove the Fox Body, which was a gutted old car. You know, like this was the first time I've done, and then the last time, I think I might have driven a McLaren press car or something, but like. This was like, oh, if I have to go 100 miles, this is the car. Like, the ride is excellent. The seats are super comfortable. The radio sounds really good.
Dude, when I plug my new stereo in, I thought my old speakers would be terrible. They're not. Like,
no,
they
the Harman Kardon in 05 was really good.
It was.
No squeaks or rattles. Really great driving position. The elbows fall in the right place. Air conditioning is cranking, like
and the engine is so smooth and quiet.
Yeah.
It just kind of sings down the highway. Like I was talking to somebody about, you know, if my engine blew up, what would I do? And you know, LS swap or whatever. And it was just like hypotheticals. Like I'm not gonna do that. But I was like, but it would fundamentally change the character of the car.
Yeah,
like it would not feel, sound,
yeah,
or move the way it did when it, you know, the way it does currently.
Yeah. No, it's like, I wouldn't change a thing. It's perfect.
Yeah.
Like, and even just, I didn't go for a real drive in it, but this, the Dynan S3, but the supercharger that we talked about last week that you took for a drive and made a video with, I moved it in the shop here, and I was like, I should, and I literally went around the block with it once, which the owner said I could do. And it felt like, especially with the SMG, it felt like such a tuner car.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like when it idled rougher than my car, the tip in wasn't as smooth. Obviously, the SMG was clunky as shit.
Once it's warm, it idled totally fine. But I know what you say. On startup, it kind of had like a rolling idle type of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, my car just. Don't touch. Leave it the fuck alone. It's perfect.
Yeah. The one thing I liked about that car was it had 391 gears in it. And when I checked his MPG for his drive down, like I was just going through it, he still was getting 27.7, like average from the Bay Area.
What do you think his revs were at on the, what were your revs at on the freeway? Higher, right?
Oh, definitely higher. Yeah. But I'm saying like, the fact we can get 29 miles per gallon.
Yeah.
If I wanted a little more acceleration, I could do gears, but not sacrifice what I think is a really great quality about the GT abilities of that car.
I thought my like onboard computer, I thought it was like messed up, because I drove to San Diego. I didn't look at it, and I didn't have totally a full tank when I left, but I had like almost like the needle hadn't really come off of full, but I hadn't just filled it up, so I didn't know exactly how much I had, but I got there. Had half a tank, and I was like, okay, well, and I pulled up the onboard computer, and it said 230 miles of range, and I was like, well, that must be off. That can't be right. And then I drove 120 miles home, and it was like, no, that was correct. Like, it really is, like, it's probably a 500-mile range, given the fucking, if you just did the highway.
If it's just highway, like, I drove to Palm Springs and back on one tank, and I still had over a quarter left. So if traffic's flowing and it's not really hot out, it has really good range.
Yeah. It's fucking great.
Yeah.
I can't, when I put Bluetooth in that car, that's a 20, it might as well be a 2022. It's not old. It's like, it's just so nice.
Yeah, and it still has four airbags, I think. I think it has airbags in the B pillar in the front.
Yeah, so, got enough airbags. Be fine.
Probably.
Probably be okay.
Yeah.
But damn, what a nice thing. So I have to drive that more. What else? Oh, I wanted to shout out to Tom Segura. Do we talk about this yet?
We did not.
I finished the book. I left it here so you could take it.
Nice.
Tom Segura's book out. It's called I'd Like to Play Alone, Please. It's just a collection of stories from his life, like many comedians' books are. Who is the other comic whose book I read recently?
I don't know. I mean, I read Judd Apatow's books.
Judd Apatow's Sick in the Head. Yeah. I liked that. Jesus, I'm blanking. I read another comics book recently that was a collection. Oh, Seth Rogen. Seth Rogen's yearbook. Similar vibe. Fun stories from their life and family and growing up. And Tom's humor definitely translates to writing. So you should definitely go buy Tom's book. It's on, you know, all the places you get books now. Support the boy. Help him get his next Porsche.
His wife had the best dig on their podcast. She was talking about his book and how good it is. And she's like, wow, it's just like so deep and expressive and there's so much like emotion and it's so smart. And he's like, thank you. And she's like, I want to meet that guy. And it was so good.
That's a good setup.
Yeah. It was a perfect long setup.
His dad reminds me so much of my father-in-law. His dad was like Vietnam guy and my father-in-law is fucking the Vietnam guy. My father-in-law has every possible type of PTSD you can get from Vietnam, and so it just like his dad, my father-in-law kind of alternates between the sort of what you'd call shell shock, and then the sort of like slide in the brag about, you know, how many people they killed, you know what I mean? Where it's like, war's terrible until it's like fucking crazy adrenaline rush. And I got that vibe. But
wasn't he like on one of the first planes or boats that
arrived?
Seventh
pair of boots, my father-in-law. Jeez. Was this the seventh American soldier to land in Vietnam.
Whoa.
Yeah. Just got sober at 80 because the doctor said, the next drink, sir, will kill you. One more. If you have one more sip of alcohol, you will die.
And he's like, 7'6", couldn't stop
And he
me.
Was like, I told you I could stop when I wanted.
You know what? If that's what someone has to do to stop, they're like, I'll prove it to you. Like, perfect.
Well, it's you know, it's because he's not sober. He's dry, right? It's like he hasn't dealt with the mental aspect, you know, of why were you drinking in the first place?
Right.
Why did you take such bad care of your body for 50 years? It's literally just, I don't drink anymore, and I told you I could stop when I wanted to. I'll drink until I don't want to drink anymore. Sir, the next one will kill you. Today's that day. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, considering he's doing, like, well, and we've had some incredible conversations since he got sober, he's a totally, totally different person, but without having dealt with any of the we started talking about Tom's book. I don't know how he ended up talking about my father-in-law, but same kind of vibe with his dad. So get that book. Support Tom. It's very funny. And then for our friend Bert, who's got his tour looks so fun. I wish any of those
full
dates.
Full throttle, right?
Yeah, none of the dates are on the West
fully
Coast,
loaded.
Though. Fully loaded, I think.
Fully loaded.
But it's all like Midwest and East Coast stuff. If there was an LA date or a Colorado date or anything, I would make the trip to go because it's stacked to fucking hell.
Yeah, it is.
And it seems like a really good time. There's no dates that are near here.
If it's a success, maybe they'll come back through the West Coast and do it again.
I think, on their podcast, they said this was the trial run, right?
Yeah.
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 Tom was just on Are You Garbage, and it was really funny.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
I gotta fucking get on that show. I gotta get them in here, and then I gotta find, and
where are they based?
Oh, they're fucking
like
Philly.
East Coast, right?
They're Philly. It's either South Jersey or Philly. They're super Goomba.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they tour a little bit, so maybe they'll
They were in L.A. like a month before I found out about them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was annoying as
they'll
fuck.
They'll be back.
Yeah.
They'll be back.
They will be back, and they said they would come to the show. I hit them up on Twitter. They said they would come to the show.
Oh, rad.
Yeah,
okay.
We'll play.
Someone asked us a garbage
We'll play
question.
Is Your Car Garbage?
That we'll get to later.
Tom, not garbage. I don't want to give away the ending of the show, but Tom came off pure class on Are You Garbage? It was very fucking funny. I don't have a whole lot else on my list. Oh, my dad has finally decided to get a new car. You know, he has that Cayenne that I hate.
Mm-hmm.
He bought the Cayenne that was like the orphan Cayenne. Someone had spec'd the ugliest Cayenne turbo in history with the worst combination of options you could imagine.
What color is he outside?
It's black.
Right.
It's like metallic obsidian black with a chocolate brown interior and the extended burlwood package.
The burlwood's bad.
It's heinous.
I mean, it could be yellow on the outside
it's
or something.
It
could be worse.
It could have been the color of the Brazilian flag or something. But as far as black Cayennes go, it's about as terrible as you could get. And he's had it for a while. I think it's a 17 or something. And so my dad has always been, I'll take that one. He doesn't want to order something. He doesn't want to wait. He wants to go to the dealer, point at a car, and drive it home that day.
Yeah, he's a decision man.
And I do respect that. But when you're into Porsche, and this is now his third Porsche? No, second Porsche. He had a first-gen Cayenne, and then he had a Q7, and now he's got another Cayenne. But when they offer this, and he's not limited financially, he could fucking, and he's not, certainly not in a rush. He's been driving this goddamn thing for 5 years. He's not in a hurry. So, like, I was like, Dad, just get what you want. Don't just fucking choose from what's available, especially because his dealer friend, which is Town Motors, Englewood, New Jersey, which is where I'm getting my car too, it's not a huge dealer. It's not like they've got 100 Cayenne turbos sitting there to choose from. They have two. So he said, now I'm going home for 4th of July. He wants me to help him build a car.
Nice.
And so
exclusive manufacturer.
This is maybe he would certainly have access to exclusive. But he doesn't even know what's available. He has no idea what the choices are. And there are many, many choices. He probably doesn't even know, like he certainly doesn't need the turbo. He just gets the turbo because it's fucking there. The GTS would be no good on Connecticut roads.
Totally.
The highways are too bumpy. He's not carving canyons. He's driving on the freeway. There's certainly not a turbo. A Turbo S hybrid, maybe. He might, because he could get some use out of the hybrid portion of it for local driving, mm-hmm. and he could plug it in at the house, no problem there. And you got like 40 miles of electric driving.
Pretty good.
He could do a bunch of his errands in EV mode, totally.
It's like a Volt, but the valleys will be happy to park it.
Right. speaking of Volt, I had a guy come do some work at the shop the other
day. I saw the silver one.
The silver one. Yeah. He said he's been using that car for work since it was new, 100,000 miles, never been to the dealer once.
Yeah.
That's the Volt is the move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did I tell you that a fan who lives next door to a GM tech, like a head tech, and he said they've never seen him in the dealership?
See, that's the kind of car you need. Yeah. The Volt it might actually be the perfect car. I mean, it really is a fucking fine piece of engineering. Mm-hmm. It's like even Lieberman, I was just on the Motor Trend podcast with them. Even Ed Lowe and Johnny Lieberman were like, yeah, that's an $80,000 car that they were selling for $40,000. That's why it's so good.
Wow.
So anyway, I'm trying to figure out what color combo, because, you know, my pops, he's not flashy. He doesn't want anybody looking at him. He doesn't want someone to go, oh, that's the guy in town with the fucking olive green or whatever. But I still want him to have something that says, like, I'm kind of fire. So I'm thinking maybe like British Racing Green, which is always good, mm-hmm. or like Diamond Blue Metallic, like that kind of real, like, I'm a sailor blue, you know that blue?
Yeah, he would dig that.
The blue to match his boat, maybe. Get a fucking chip from the boat and have him paint it the same as the boat.
A dark metallic blue is very good. Or like, dark metallic greens are also good. They're both subtle, but they kind of go, that's different. You didn't just go with silver.
No grays, no, you can't, no. He said a fucking run of silver cars, no.
Well,
no,
and also nothing says bought off the lot like a silver car.
Yeah, and no black, because his car, it's just so fucking dirty all the time. Like, he literally drives, when he goes up shooting in Orvis, it's on a dirt road. So even if he washes the car the day before, he goes up there once, it's just fucked, instant fucked. So it's got to be, I'm thinking like a green, maybe like a brown, like a cool brown.
Okay. I don't really like brown cars.
Not into brown?
Even when I see them I've seen them on Panameras and other cars where like, it's got a metallic flake in it where I go, okay, it's showing the shape well, but I could get that with other colors,
you know.
And if the light's flat or weird, like, it just doesn't do it for me, but, you know, maybe he's into it. Looks like a shoe.
Yeah. If you've got a good Porsche color for someone who wants to show class but also be kind of forgettable and anonymous, leave a comment. Let me know if you've got a recommendation. I'm leaning towards the British Racing Green over, like, camel interior is pure class.
Yeah, I think that or... A dark blue. And just say, like, hey, you know how you like the ocean? He'll go, oh, yeah. I do like the ocean.
Yeah, like a yachting blue with, like, a medium tan interior. That would be really nice.
Yeah, just don't do a white interior and be like, it's like a sail.
No. Yeah. He would get, because when you go on the golf course and the fucking shoot, you'd get dirt. It would be fucked. Yeah.
Khaki interior. So. Dark blue outside.
Yeah. Pike's Peak is this week. Testing has already begun, I think, today. I think today's first day of testing. We're going up there Wednesday morning. You got a confirmation on the Lightning, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So we do have a Ford Lightning, EV. We're going to hit fucking Walmart, get some induction burners, get some supplies. We're going to cook some fucking bacon, egg, and cheeses at altitude on the mountain.
It's going to be so cool.
It's going to be fun. We're going to hang out with Larry Chen. A lot of our friends are going to be there, not just Ken and his team at Hoonigan, but... you know, Johnny's going to be there. Zwart is going to be there. Joey's going to be there. But Tim is going to be there. My friend Cam Ingram from Rhodes Scholars is racing against Johnny.
Yeah, they're either in the GT4 class or whatever it's called.
Yeah, he's going to be up there,
is
too.
Is Rob Hall racing again this year from wheel drive class?
Oh, I don't... Holland.
Rob Holland.
Rob
right.
Holland. I think Rob Holland is there. Can we look at the entry list?
Yeah.
And see what other names do we know here on the entry list? Where the fuck are the names?
Ooh.
Rob Holland is there, yes.
And he's running a GT4 RS.
What other names do we recognize
here? So he's in the Johnny class also.
Let's see. Oh, William All Young is running in the Unlimited class. William All Young is the dude from Grid Life in that batshit Civic Si. It's got a really crazy fast Civic Si.
Cool.
That guy's cool as fuck. Okay, there's Rod Millen, of course.
Yep.
Is going to be driving Joey's, the Emotion Engineering car.
I think it's Reese Millen's running it, right?
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, Rod Millen's driving his Tacoma Hill Climb truck.
Like as an exhibition.
The historic thing. Yeah, yeah. Is that the whole list? No.
No.
Okay, here we go. Another page.
More classes.
What else do we have?
This is open class.
Lonnie Unser. Is Lonnie Unser related to Al Unser?
To Al and Bobby? Probably.
I mean,
that family has a ton of records on Pikes Peak.
Yeah. Let's see. What other names do I know here?
David Donner and David Donahue.
Oh, Dave Donahue is going to be there. Our friend who helped us move furniture at the Autrain Museum.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, Randy. Yeah. Have you ever had like a championship race car driver be your PA for a podcast? Well, we have.
On the conference call, they're like, David's your tech guy. And I talked to him, and then we met him. I was like, I know you.
I know you. You're a champion racing driver. Why are you working for us? Paul Dallenbach, that's a legend.
Yes.
He's always building some crazy shit. Oh, Dai Yoshihara, excellent.
Back.
Oh, we're going to have so many people to talk to.
Yeah.
Great.
And then
this is
going
to be fun as fuck.
And we'll make some new friends along the way.
Well, we're going to have food. So
yeah.
Of course we're going to make. How do you make friends on the mountain? Have a fucking kitchen.
At a racetrack, if you hand out food, everyone's your friend. Yeah, there's a lot of people. This
we're
going to
be like the straight grilled cheese truck. It's going to be fun as fuck.
Yeah, we will be.
Do we know this heat bubble that's happening in the Midwest right now? There's like a massive heat wave.
Sounds like a Jay Leno setup.
Right in the middle of the country. It does. It does sound like it. But like, what is our expected weather?
Oops.
What is, you just auto-filled Jay Leno. What is our expected weather at the base of the mountain? Colorado Springs?
Well, it depends on the time. It really depends on the time.
I mean, the highs are fucking high, my friend. Oh, that's
but
a lot
we're gonna
of rain.
Be at 9,000 feet.
Well, Colorado Springs is showing rain.
Yeah.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, it's showing rain.
Yep.
Well, that's bad.
Yeah. Welcome to Thunderdome.
Do you think? You think they'll cancel it? Do they run in the rain?
I don't know. I know they won't run if it's snowing.
Right.
I don't know if they run in the rain or not. I think what they did last time I was there, since should not say usually, but when I was there, they held the race for like an hour because the top was too cold, and then there was this pocket from like 9 a.m. to 1 where the weather was clear, and then rain started to roll in at 1-ish, and I think they were still going to run. It just everyone realizes that if you're running after the rain starts, your time is fucked.
Yeah,
like you're not going to win, you're not competitive.
Yeah, and you might die.
Yeah, I mean, you have to be a lot more careful. Like, Dai...
I mean, some of these dudes are running slicks. I mean,
Dai's running 1,200 horsepower in the BRZ or whatever, and he left just before the rain started, and it was, you know, something to be concerned about. So I don't know if they canceled for rain. I could look it up. But the thing there is, like, the weather changes really quickly, and just because it's raining down in Colorado Springs proper, I don't know if it'll be raining at Pikes Peak. Usually it's just cold as fuck at 4 a.m. when you get there. And then in the middle of the day, it'll be like 75 because the sun's really intense. And you just bring clothes for both.
I'm going to have a real big suitcase with all kinds of things.
A lot of puffy things, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what to bring, so I'm going to bring everything.
So I just looked up Pike's Peak weather, and it also says it will be raining.
And hot?
Thursday. Less hot. 37 degree low, 53 high.
Oof. But that's at the top.
I don't know. I don't know where they take this. I don't know if it's at the bottom or at the top.
I don't. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what we get out of this. like, we're gonna interview people. We're gonna do podcasts. We're obviously going to do a review of the Ford Lightning because the racing portion of this ends at like 9 a.m. every day, right?
The practice portion does. Yeah.
Well, then. I mean, the race is in the middle of the day,
yes,
right?
Yes,
but but the practice portion ends at 9, so
usually,
we're going to have the rest of the day to do whatever we need to do. So we'll do a review of the Lightning. We're going to kind of fucking fly this one by the seat of our pants a little bit, I think.
Yeah,
but hopefully
I'm
we come back with
it.
Some good coverage.
I mean, there's a lot of people there, and I think we have a decent amount of time to get some coverage. So
I'm
pretty confident in that.
Yeah.
You know, race day is a long day. It's, you know, everyone's setting up 4 a.m., 5 a.m., and then the race runs till 1 or 2 p.m., as long as there's no cancellations or delays. That's a long time. Like, we had a lot of standing around and stuff.
Yeah. Well, aren't we flying out at, like, 4 p.m. on race day?
No, I think we fly out Sunday, the next
day. Oh, okay. I didn't. Race is Saturday.
Correct.
Okay, yeah. So we do
it. No, wait.
So race Saturday or
race
Sunday,
Sunday,
bro? The race is Sunday.
Let me see.
I think we fly out at 4 p.m. on race day.
I think that's right.
Out of Denver. How far is Denver from Colorado Springs?
2 hours.
Oh, about. So we need to... Yeah, that's
we'll
a thing.
For that.
That's definitely a thing that we need to adjust for, I think, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Race day is Sunday.
Flight 3, I don't know. We'll have to look.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's a thing. We have to make sure that happens. So hopefully it works out okay.
I think it'll be fine.
Yeah. That's all I have in my book. We got some questions, and then we're going to end this show with a location piece from last weekend at the Hypercar Invitational. I recorded a interview I did on stage in front of the team, the Hypercar guests, with Adam Chamberlain, the CEO of Aston Martin North America, and Andy Prio, the driver of the Valkyrie. I recorded like a 10-minute interview about the Valkyrie, which I think you guys might find interesting. So we're going to do questions from the Patreon, and then we will end this week's show with that. So let's see what we got here. David G says, Matt, you once got HRE to design a wheel for my Fox body. How was the process? Was working with them from the initial concept and design phase to testing the final product? There's a lot of truth in this. I worked with HRE because I wanted a really cool set of wheels for my Fox body, and they came up with a design that was ultimately called the RS-105. There it is. Yep, that's the wheel. And I wanted a wheel that was evocative of the Cobra R design, a five-spoke wheel,
but
modernized and very tough looking. It's a three-piece forged wheel. I asked them to like name it something like my initials, and they didn't want to do that. So it actually looks great on. It's a very common choice for four GTs.
Should have been the MF-er wheel.
I wanted that. It was the. It ended up being very common for 2004 to 06 Ford GTs, but there wasn't any like testing. Like I looked at three different designs, and I was like, "Oh, that's the one right there."
They print
digitally, and then they made it, and then it went into their, catalog. There wasn't really any testing. I mean, we knew it was going to fit. We gave them the specs of the car. And it did, and there was no concerns about it being strong enough or anything like that. I wasn't that involved in the development process. It was, here's the car, here's the inspiration, make it black,
And right.
That was really it. And you can still buy that wheel, and it's a great wheel.
I swear we answered this, like on the
definitely,
last show.
Definitely.
Cross-track question.
Yeah, definitely. Greg Scott. Okay, now I need to have my dad back on the show to talk about the interest rate thing. I'm not an idiot, but I don't really understand fully the relationship between the interest rate hike and everything else, and like, why do all mortgage lenders go off this interest rate? Like, I would love to have my dad back on the show.
Sure.
To talk about the interest rate, because I'm not a financial person and I don't really get it. But I do know that when the interest rate goes up, people take out fewer loans.
Right.
That's
the basic thing is like the biggest bank loans money to the big banks, and then they loan money to the small bank, they loan money to people.
Right.
So the higher the interest rate is from the big bank, then the higher the interest rate has to be for the other subsequent banks to make money. And by raising interest, it's supposed to curb inflation because everyone calms down.
Right.
But it's like, it's this weird dance now of like raise interest, but also does it cause a recession, which then does prevent runaway inflation from happening, but it also makes things shitty.
Right. If financing rates are super, super low, like approaching 0%,
right,
then a lot of people will go, yeah, I'll fucking buy that car.
Exactly.
And if financing rates are higher, they might hold on to their car for a little longer. They might not take a super long loan if they can't afford it.
Right. I think what's interesting to me is whether or not the interest rate stuff will affect the used car market, because I don't think I realized how many people were financing used collector cars, that is a business, on both sides. So how much will it impact that?
Well, do you remember were you there with me? I don't know if you were there with me when I was talking to somebody from one of the big collector car leasing companies, and you can lease a fucking Valkyrie.
Whoa.
You want a Valkyrie? You can lease that shit through your business. You want a new Aventador? You can lease that through your through your business. And I didn't, I asked this very nice woman who's very upfront about it. I go, why? Explain to me your business. And it was a financial company that had I don't want to say what it was, for a variety of reasons. But let's just say it's called Smith Leasing. Right, I said, why would I want to get an Aventador through Smith Leasing and not just from lease it from Lamborghini through the dealer, right? If that's what I want. And she goes, well, she goes, if you owned a small business, let's say you owned a farming company, and you had a 30,000 acre farm somewhere, and you were doing well, and you had equipment, you had combines and big farm equipment that was expensive that you would finance. She goes, if your accountant or your tax auditor person was going through your finances and then they saw under your business Lamborghini Financial, they would go, well, this Lamborghini is obviously completely not, has nothing to do with farming.
Right.
Whereas if they saw Smith Financial with a massive lease payment, if they went further with the questioning, they would find out it was a Lamborghini. But at first glance,
no red flags.
No, at first glance, no red flags. So that's why you would do that. You could lease a new or used car through this company, and it wouldn't show up as Aston Martin Financial, Porsche Financial, or on your statements.
Got it.
So you're not. It's not illegal, you know what I mean? Or it's probably illegal to try to write off Aston Martin, but if you wanted your business to deal with all the cars and, you know, you wanted to try and sneak it in as a piece of equipment, it wouldn't immediately raise any red flags because this company would also happily lease you a combine,
right,
or whatever,
right, right,
the fuck, you know, a giant truck, a dump truck or something, you know, anything that you needed. And so this person was kind of, you know, hovering around, you know, waiting for someone to find out how they could get one of these things on their business account.
Yeah.
And that's a thing.
Okay. So, clever stuff.
Yeah, it is. And yeah. Michael Farahani. Good last name, buddy. Close. Thank you for introducing to other podcasts like The Dollop and Are You Garbage? You're welcome. Answer the following highly controversial question. Do you brush your teeth in the shower? Apparently, it's a trashy move. I do not. No, I don't want to brush my teeth with hot water.
Right.
I like to brush my teeth with cold water.
I agree.
I do shave my entire face and head in the shower.
So you shave without sight? That always freaks me out.
No, I have a mirror in the shower.
You have a mirror, okay.
I have a shower mirror. It's not a great... The anti-fog mirrors are made of Mylar, like those balloons. Mm-hmm. They're not made of glass. And so from like a couple of years of like wiping it, it's getting some scratches.
Yeah,
and
I gotta get
a new mirror.
Yeah.
But yes, I have a shower mirror and I shave my head and face in the shower. I can do it without a mirror.
Ooh, that freaks
I've
me
done
out.
It enough that I can get pretty goddamn good results. Like if I'm on a hotel or something or on the road, I have done it without a mirror and I can do it without a mirror, but I have a mirror.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, why not?
You have a balloon.
I mean, I do the fucking back without a mirror. I can't, it's not like I have a,
right,
some fucking crazy triangulation kit to look at the back. I only, the mirror is only good for here.
You need a General Motors backup camera.
Yeah, no, I could do it, get it pretty goddamn close with no mirror, but yeah. Jake Shores, has there been a car you've built and had sentimental attachment to that was difficult for you to sell emotionally? And then he explains, have you had any of those?
No.
I've never had to really sell a car for financial reasons. I'm very lucky in that regard. Whenever it's come time to sell a car, I've usually come to that decision because I was done with it emotionally.
Mm.
Either I wasn't driving it for a while, or I was more interested in something else, or whatever. In the case of the Fox body we were just talking about, got the chassis all sorted. And the end result was a car that handled amazingly and had way more chassis than engine. And the only way to make that car exciting was to spend a ton more money on a completely new engine and introduce potentially other problems like cooling and whatever. And, you know, so if I move on from a car, I've usually emotionally moved on for a car. There may be a day where I need the money for something and have to sell a car and regret it. Fortunately for me, and I realize this is a unique case, but fortunately for me, that hasn't happened. And in the cases where I have sold cars because I wanted something else, you know, it was emotionally gone. I wish I could have kept my Skyline. I sold the Skyline in the downsizing of not having space to keep stuff, and that would have been a really nice one to keep. And eventually I'd like to have another Skyline, but, you know.
Because then they got really expensive.
Yeah, but I mean, I doubled my money on it in 6 months. So how are you mad about that?
Right.
You know, you can't if you sell a car at a profit, at any kind of profit, you can't be mad about what happens later. You got out of a depreciating asset for a profit.
Well, and because at the time you made the right decision.
Yeah.
We never know what the future will hold. Yeah. Like the only car I kind of missed was my STI, but I sold it for financial reasons because I'd moved to LA and wasn't making enough money to make the payments. So I had arrived at a very pragmatic decision. Like, this is causing me more stress than enjoyment.
Sure.
I think it'd be hard if someone in a flash had to sell something they put a lot of work into. That'd be rough.
Yeah. Sean Finney says, my friend has a Ferrari 458, Porsche 997, Turbo Cab, BMW iX, and a BMW X7. Really covered the bases there. He has one garage space left. What old car under 100K would you put in there? Obvious choice is an air-cooled 911. Any non-obvious choices? He seems to be into BMWs. E30 M3 would be a good one. A 325iS convertible M Technique, I think, would be cool.
Yeah, I mean, because he already has fast stuff. I mean, Ferrari and the
maybe
Porsche
a
Turbo,
cool so cruiser.
Like, yeah, I would go cool cruiser.
Maybe like a Pontiac GTO Judge convertible. You know,
yeah,
like
that's a good one.
Cool muscle car that you could kind of roll around in. That's not something super
like
fast.
Lincoln Continental type thing.
Yeah.
Something like that would be really fun. A totally different vibe from this kind of precise, new, you know, foreign to a degree, like collection that he has.
Yeah,
I would go with something old and American. Get a totally different flavor of ice cream.
Yeah, Lincoln Continental, a Series 2, or like maybe even like a Rolls Corniche. That could be fun.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Maybe find a Rolls Corniche that's had like an LS swap.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jake Kennedy, since I own both a Lamborghini and a Ferrari, is there one you prefer to drive over the other? And is there anything that surprised you about the ownership of each that you love or hate? I mean, one is the Ferrari is much easier to use just as a car. I mean, the Ferrari, like, I prefer to drive it more because it's just easier to deal with.
Is it a visibility thing, or is it the engine like warms up quicker? And is it
engine warms up quicker? It's easier to get in and out of. I don't have to take my shoes off. The fact that the top comes off and it's a open air car, that's nicer. It's less like clunky in the city. You know, the Lamborghini is not fun to drive at lower speeds.
Mm.
It's just not. Whereas the Ferrari is more fun at those lower speeds. The Lamborghini, the thing that's the most surprising about that car is how comfortable it is for like a road trip. Like to go to Santa Barbara or to go to Palm Springs or to drive it for a couple hours on the freeway at 80 or 90 miles an hour is like glorious. That's really nice. And that's the most surprising thing about that car, because it's not how most people mentally position a car like that. But the Ferrari, like, I would never want to drive the Lambo for 10 minutes. You take it out, driving it is the activity. Whereas the Ferrari, I'm more likely to drive back and forth to my house for work in 10 minutes. Because it's less of an event in a good way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, what's nice, the Ferrari... What surprised me, the Ferrari so far has cost me a lot more money in maintenance. That's
that is funny.
The Lamborghinis cost me very little money in maintenance.
Because someone did all the maintenance before you got it.
Yeah. Wow. Zach, any plans of following me and picking up an exotic soon or sticking to BMWs? You're going the other way.
I'm going
picking
the other
up
way.
A daily driver.
Yeah. I need to find my parking garage business before I start shopping for exotic cars. I'm going Chevy Volt because I drove, Derek borrowed my car for something. I don't know if I'm supposed to say what. So a friend of mine loaned me his, Cayman S. And I've talked about how one day I could see myself graduating from E46 to Cayman S.
Yeah.
I got it in. I was like, this is comfortable.
Yeah, they're nice.
It's super easy to use and the engine's crazy responsive. Like everything, it's cramped inside though. Like I picked up Mark. He's like 6'3", and his head was hitting the roof. I'm like, this is not for tall people.
That Cayman S is a few years old.
Yes,
the newer ones are roomier.
Yeah, I don't know how I ended up there, but I'm going the other way. I'm going Volt.
Yeah, once Donnie finishes with the Ferrari this time, we truly will have addressed everything. We already addressed the engine. We've got the all new electronics now. It has a new radio in it. And we've got the new door cards, so those aren't fucking falling off anymore. We have refinished the wheels. We put new tires on it. And we're now doing all new brakes, suspension, and bushings.
Jeez.
Nothing is left.
Wow.
I anticipate being able to drive the car. Like, I actually want to drive it, a lot. Like, it has enough miles. The miles don't matter anymore. We're past collector value. Doesn't matter. I want to drive that car a lot. And, Donnie's talking about going on these old Ferrari road trips and shit. It sounds really fun. And once he's through with it, this time, it really will be everything. Like, there's nothing left. And once you get those cars sorted once, you don't really have to do anything after that. Like, this car, whoever in the past fucking janked out on it. Like, they just didn't spend the money to do shit right.
Yeah.
And they left certain things. They changed other things with cheap parts. And so it requires some unfucking. And, in hindsight, I could have been a little more patient as a buyer. I could have done more inspecting. Even though I did an inspection and the paperwork was fake, I could have been a little more finicky as a buyer. But here we are, and even after all that shit, it's not cost more than what it would have, there's no guarantee that spending more money would have gotten a better car.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still into this car for under 80, which the market—
With all the maintenance and stuff?
Yeah.
Wow.
Bought the car for $63,000.
Oh, wow.
A lot of fucking room there.
Oh, right. The other one that you were looking at was 80.
The other one I was looking at was 80 grand. Yeah. And it was red tan. Ew, no thanks. This is
if I ever buy a Ferrari, I think the first one would be red tan, and I'll just be that person.
Ugh, yeah. No, never. Black is black, man. Black will always be cool. I no regrets, but I really want to use that thing just as a car. Donnie uses his as just a car. He fucking drives it all over the place. It works perfectly. Like, when I get to that point, that's what I want to do.
What color combo is your Countach again?
Lambos are different. Lambos different. That's different. On a Ferrari?
It's not as common.
On a Ferrari.
What is the most common Countach color?
It is red, but it's not my red. There's three reds for a Countach. There's Rosso, just Rosso. Then there's Rosso Siviglia, which is Rosso Seville red, which is what mine is. And there's Rosso Sangre, which is blood red.
Mm-hmm.
So regular Rosso is the most common color.
Like, there's several different Ferrari reds, too. And when you see the most common one next to the others, you go, it's lighter and it's got a flatness to it,
The most common Ferrari red is Rosso Corsa, racing red. Yeah. Oh my God, there's so many.
Basically,
what is the end of this?
Christian has a V60 Polestar that he wants to put smaller wheels and tires on because the 20s that came on it make the ride terrible. Should he run out the existing tires and then change the wheels and sell the 20s or keep the 20s in case it's like a collectible thing because prices are going up?
I would not sell those wheels. I would keep those wheels with the car unless you really need the money. If you really need the money, I'm sure there's some value in them. If you don't really need the money, there's more value in them being with the car.
Right.
And not to mention, if you drop to a 19-inch wheel and you sell that car to somebody, you've now got a set of summers and winters. You know, your potential customer could run the 20s in the summer, the 19s with a set of snow tires or whatever, and it increases the options. Now, question two, with the less than 10,000 miles I put on these tires, should I run the tires till they need to be changed before dropping down a size, or swap tires and rims now while it's cheaper and sell the old ones as a package? I would say get new wheels and tires and just take the other ones, put them in a plastic bag, and assuming the date codes, check the date codes, right?
I think he said they're fine because the previous owner put really cheap tires on that he hates.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I think it sounds like the dates are fine. It's just the ride is terrible and the tires are being bad.
The rims will be better protected with tires on them. So just take those wheels off, leave the tires on them, put them in bags, put them in a corner of your garage. Get the 19s, get the tires you want, and when you sell the car, sell it with both sets. I mean, that's really it. I don't think the price of a set of OEM wheels with whatever tires on them probably won't make an enormous difference in your life now, but it may reduce value from the car later if you don't have them, you know, and it does give someone an option if they want to run summers and winters, you know, later. Daniel Berman drove a 911 for the first time last week, a 991.2 C4S manual in Malibu. Came away from the experience confused. The car was technically brilliant, as was the engine, but it felt character challenged. Am I missing something? Or there perhaps more personality in the GTS and GT3 models? Well,
I think obviously there's more personality in like a GT3 because it's a purpose-built machine. I mean, it's almost like a no-holds-barred kind of situation, right? Like if that's the pinnacle of driver engagement for Porsche, arguably, then it's going to have more engagement than what you drove. Plus, you drove an all-wheel drive car, which has a lot more weight in the front. It's got a different steering feel. I mean, it'll be quick and feel tight, but it's just not going to feel like those other two things.
And the shifter for a non-GT car in that generation is only okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the rifle action GT car shifter that you get with those other cars.
Yeah.
It's only all right. It's gotten
better. Well, it's cable actuated. I was looking up, like Sharkworks sells upgraded cables to try to help that a little bit.
They
but
do.
I think that speaks to how the shifting
is. The shifter is only okay. I mean, character challenge is a tough thing to address. I mean, because it depends on your expectations.
True.
You know, like a 991 Carrera 4S manual compared to a lot of other cars is lovely, but it's also not as good as that chassis can be, which is the GT3 or a rear wheel drive GTS. You know, if you're used to a manual 135i, which is a 10-year-old car, it will feel completely different. I mean, it'll feel more analog, possibly. It might even have a better shifter. I haven't driven a 135i in a long time, so I don't know. And like you say, relative simplicity. Also, did you have it in the right mode? There's different modes you could put the car in, and I don't know which mode you were in.
True.
There's different suspension options and stuff like that. But the character of the car should be fairly consistent, although it's not the best representation of that particular generation of car.
It's hard. It's a very subjective thing.
Yeah. Oh boy. Christian says, my girlfriend is selling her BMW i8 because she needs a four-door.
Oh my God.
She wants an Aston Martin Rapide or Karma Rivero.
Does she? She might.
This is a crazy question. I can't believe it's real.
I love this. This is a cross-shopper.
Imagine wanting a four-door, mm-hmm. and your two choices are cars where the back seat is absolutely worthless.
How small the is Rapide, the thing she needs to
the
put
Rapide
in
the Rapide has the smallest back seat ever put into a four-door car.
Absolutely.
It is not usable by humans.
Yeah. Sitting
it's
behind
so
you,
small.
I sat behind you. It was very uncomfortable.
It's not good. And yeah. even for you to sit behind me, I had to be deeply uncomfortable.
We were both uncomfortable. Yeah. Yeah, it was really bad. So she just wants a coupe that has four doors because these are just really good looking coupes. They somehow stretched and added a door.
Yeah.
Don't buy a Revero.
I mean, the Revero is a piece of shit. I mean, that's a straight up piece of shit.
I've never driven or sat in one. I see them around every now and then.
They're junk.
I'm just surprised.
Yeah, they're not good at all. And no one, who's ever heard of that? I mean, what do you talk about SEO death
right.
on the fucking used
resale
car market.
Death.
Ugh.
Yeah, selling that in the future will be much more difficult than the Aston Martin.
Yeah. Ooh. I mean, if you can, the Rapide S is much nicer than the regular Rapide. It has more power. It has better gearbox programming. It has better steering. It has better brakes. If you can swing for a Rapide S, it's not a terrible car. It really isn't. It's got a regular automatic gearbox, not a single clutch, and it's like a ZF gearbox, which is good for something like that. And it's an Aston Martin, which their maintenance can be high, but their powertrains are ultimately fairly stout. It'll actually be fast. Like a Karma's like slow. It's not.
Rivero is?
Yeah, it's
wow.
like slow. It's got like a little four-cylinder nothing generator and not much electric power.
Yeah, and the Aston, that's back the NAV12, right? So it's
an
engine
NAV12.
They've had for a long time. It's
yeah.
not as complicated.
It's a stout motor. Nobody blows yeah. those engines up.
Between the two of them, that's the way to go.
For sure. But for that kind of money, like if you really want a four-door, like I'd much rather have a Panamera.
Yeah, it's just more usable as a
yeah.
four-door.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like those cars, neither of those cars have usable back seats.
Yeah. Yeah, it
I
really
mean,
depends
even
on
like,
what the seat is for.
Yeah, or like a used Flying Spur maybe.
Driving 4,000 miles a year in Chicago. Does that include wintertime?
Yeah.
Yeah, get a Panamera 4S.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
That's Steven Ledbetter, best modern sports car for really shitty roads.
How shitty
a really good ride?
How shitty is the road?
I mean, Caymans. You know, Caymans with small wheels have really good rides. They're double wishbone. No, they're not. I don't know why. I keep thinking they are. They're multi-link.
I mean, the CT5, like anything with MagRide rides really well, especially with the 18s.
Yeah.
But I mean, if the road's really shitty, I would want like a Sentra. Something with the smallest wheel and the biggest tire and
yeah.
soft suspension that just floats over garbage.
Yeah.
Prius 2.
I mean, stock Mustangs actually have pretty good ride. The Corvette. The C8 Corvette.
Oh, yeah.
has a really good ride.
Because we reviewed it on the bumpy road and
yeah.
the good road. And it's
and
yeah,
it was
that's
really
very good.
Good on the bumpy road.
Yeah.
I would say C8 Corvette probably wins the bumpy road challenge.
Mid-engine mag ride.
Yeah, that's very, very good. Okay. Tim says, on their latest podcast, Kamisa and Derek discussed the importance of judging a car for what it actually is, not preconceived notions of what it should be. Meanwhile, I think my own auto purchase disappointments have been more about shopping for an image of myself that doesn't reflect reality. Yeah, I bought a Hummer because I wanted to be that guy, and I was definitely not that guy. It didn't reflect reality. Have we developed any good strategies to stay honest with yourselves and out of these traps? Well, I mean, I think there's some times where you can't avoid a preconceived notion, such as with the Supra. You know, when Toyota revives a name like the Supra, they're telling you what it should be. And you can't avoid that, you know? Or Bronco, or when any manufacturer revives a dead mark,
mm-hmm.
you know, when it's like when the old version becomes collectible and then the manufacturer comes out with a new version, well, now you have to judge on that. You don't really have a choice on some level.
It's just so hard to buy those cars from a totally objective point because there's so much nostalgia baked into the brand in general, and then and the image that comes with that, you know.
I
think it's hard. I'm laughing because I feel like I bought my car because it does all the things I wanted a car to do, and there's not many that, you know, tick all those boxes. But there is also this image of, you know, used German cars are an aspirational purchase. You're like, I'm buying this because I can't buy the new one. Mm. And I wish I had enough money to buy the new one and all the things that go with that. But so it's kind of like you fall into that image by accident. I mean, I don't know. I think it's just, I think the way to protect yourself is to use your brain when you buy a car and think about what do you actually need versus what are you trying to say?
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if the question is about our strategies for reviewing cars or with actually purchasing.
Oh, I took it as purchasing.
As purchasing. Yeah.
I don't know why. I think I just was reading his thing about purchase
disappointments. I think I was thinking more about reviewing the cars. With purchasing the car, I mean, I think with the Mach-E is a good example. I didn't buy it because I thought it was a Mustang, mm-hmm. you know, or that it is some kind of evolution of what a Mustang could be or should be. I bought it because it's a very good toaster, and I wanted a toaster.
Right.
You know, and so I think I avoided the trap of the Mustang branding in that particular case.
I think reviewing is hard because, like, we review car objectively, its abilities, but then I don't think we want to, I don't think we really fall into the what does this car say about us as an image, but there's an emotional component that's almost in the middle. Like, you buy a muscle car because it's like, it sounds powerful and it does burnouts and it has an attitude that is fun, you know, and connects with like a part of our psyche. We might not be buying the AMG because we want to project an image of it, and we might not review this car going, this is what this will say, and that's therefore why I will judge it, you know, in a good or bad light. Mm. But it delivers a certain it pulls an emotion out of us, and that's what we enjoy about it. And that's a more subjective thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Martin Bueno, since you're going to Pikes Peak, what cars do you wish you could take for a ride from over the years? Like Pikes Peak race cars.
Right.
I don't have a very good... Other than like the cars that like set records, like Milestones, I haven't paid enough attention to every car that has run over the years to really to think about it. I mean, I remember that crazy Peugeot thing that Sebastian Loeb, was it a Citroen? Whatever Sebastian Loeb drove, that seemed pretty rowdy. You know, certainly something like Jeff Zwartz, what the fuck kind of car? Peugeot 208. That video is insane.
Yeah.
875 horsepower. That seems pretty good. Some of the cars that I see though, like they're too much for me. Like I don't fucking...
Well, I think like that car would be too much for me. I think I would just want to go, I'm the same as you. I don't have the encyclopedia of the cars.
Yeah.
I think I would want to choose something vintage, back when it was all dirt.
Yeah.
Like when I was at GridLife Colorado, some guy was testing his hill climb Camaro. It was a second gen Camaro hill climb car. Sounded like a NASCAR through dirt. Like that kind of thing at Pikes Peak seems fun. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be that fast, tail out. Like it would be more about what experience do I want on Pikes Peak versus what record holder would I want to drive.
Yeah, I think it would. I'd like to drive like, you know, a Dakar 911 up the dirt. That to me would be more fun than driving some insane time attack car up a canyon, you know, the canyon or the paved version.
Right. Or like one of Zwartz cars.
We drive a lot of canyons. Like, that's not so novel to me anymore. But driving rally car is like, ooh, yes.
Yes.
Yes, rally car, please. This last question we're gonna save for later because we don't want to. Zach made a calendar boo boo.
Yep.
This morning, he thought the embargo was today, June 20th, but it was actually next month, July 20th, for Sport Classics. So about a couple hundred of you saw the video a month early, and that's our bad.
My bad.
But we're not 100%. Not gonna talk about it on the show.
So we'll answer
now
these Sport Classic questions in a month.
Yeah, we'll end the show with my interview And we've covered a little bit of this when I talked about going for a ride in the Valkyrie. I maybe should have run the interview first, but I didn't. We've got Adam Chamberlain, the CEO of Aston Martin North America. And then we've got Andy Prio, who was the factory test driver for Valkyrie, discussing the Valkyrie, what it is, what it is like to drive, what the whole point of it is from the Hypercar Invitational. And we'll end the show there. Thank you, everybody. See you later.
Hyper 241444. You guys got it totally, I can tell. Thank you so much.
I did it earlier. It literally takes like 30 seconds to go through the whole thing and make a donation. It's very, very easy, especially got that double-click Apple Pay thing going on. It's great. This car right here is insane. This is the newest hypercar. It is very, very, very fast and very, very special. And we have a very special guest to come chat about it for a few minutes, Mr. Adam Chamberlain, the CEO of Aston Martin North America. Come join us and let's tell everybody what this thing is about.
Bring Andy up as well.
Sure, yeah. Andy, come join us too. We have our own... or their own tame racing driver, Andy Priol. Come on up. Andy is the one who will be giving rides in this car, yes?
Correct.
I'm sorry, we only have two chairs. You guys take them. Come on, Andy. Mike AV guy, can we get that third mic, actually? I wasn't expecting a third guest, but here we are. Yeah. Oh, it's right here. Here, Andy. Take this.
Oh, thanks.
Shazam. All right. Hey, nice to meet you for the first time. Okay. Adam, what are we looking at?
Honestly, insanity. But no, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, good evening. On behalf of Aston Martin North America, thank you so much for joining us this evening. I'd like to just say thank you so much to Alejandro for the amazing event you put on. You and I met in a friend's garage in Atlanta. Garage is probably underplayed. Gallery is probably better. But in a friend's garage in Atlanta a couple of months ago, and you said you're going to come and join me. And I think what an amazing event. So it's a privilege for me, for us, my team to be here this evening. Thank you very much. This is just... probably a pipe dream that started a couple of years ago, maybe a few more, but a couple of years ago, and suddenly we're seeing reality. So we have a road car, we have a Spider, so an open top road car, and then we have this Valkyrie AMR Pro race car, which is I grew up as a car guy. My first proper car was a Mark 1 Golf GTI, a Rabbit, and for my American friends. Which was 102 horsepower, felt like 1,000 with no brakes, but it was good fun. And so I grew up, and honestly, when I saw this the first time with Andy at Homestead in Miami, I was emotional and the hairs on the back of my neck, because it's just like nothing else I've ever seen. So you'll see it. The other thing I should say, there'll be two of them. We have a custom car, and this is one of our prototype cars here tomorrow. So there'll be two Valkyries on track. The noise, you'll need mufflers. The noise is insanity. It reminds me of the V12 Formula One cars. And that's probably the closest thing that any of us will ever see in our lifetime to a true Formula One car. This thing is so close. It's amazing. I think 1,000 kilograms in weight. And can you do the transformation to pound? 2,200 pounds, because I'm obviously an English guy in metric here. But 1,000 kilograms in weight, 2,000 kilograms in downforce. So there's some statistics right there for you. I think we have 1,000 horsepower, V12, 6.5 litre. So I think it's about 138 horsepower per litre for those of you who are good on a calculator. And just pure insanity. The road car has the same engine, but it's a little bit heavier because it has hydraulics and a KERS unit to make sure it glues it to road on road tires, because it would just shred the tires without that on the race car. So we're very privileged as a brand to be able to bring this car to the streets, and literally to the streets. The first, I think we have three customer cars in the US. Where's Ian James? Somewhere here? Where's Ian? Ian. Ian will be driving the first customer car in the US on the track tomorrow alongside our car. And I think you guys, I'm very unfortunate, I have to run back to Atlanta for a family thing, but you guys are going to be blessed to see two of these cars on the racetrack tomorrow. And maybe just let's hear Andy talk about it for a couple of seconds, because Andy, I've known Andy since about 2003, 2004, when we were in Audi together.
That's right.
And Andy was racing Audis and running the Audi Quattro driving program. And I'll let you just give you a quick synopsis of your career, because it's too varied. But Andy's been the main driver doing the shakedown and the testing with Multimatic. This is a partnership. The race car is a partnership with Multimatic. I'll let Andy just talk about that for a second.
Yeah, hi. Good evening, everyone. It's lovely to be here. So, just briefly, I'm Andy Prio. Probably best known for my three World Touring Car Championships, but also I've raced at Le Mans many times and won the Nürburgring 24-hour, blah, blah, blah. Lots of other things. Been racing for 20 years. My career came to an end only a few years ago. I ended with Ford Chip Ganassi, where I drove for Mark II GT car, but also raced for them at Le Mans and all over the world in the World Endurance Championship. So I had the privilege to end my career, and then got a phone call to say, Andy, we'd like you to develop the LMBH car for Aston Martin, which was planning to be part of the Le Mans program. And obviously that changed with the regulations and various other things, and I ended up developing this car for Multimatic and for AMR, which is just a phenomenal bit of kit. I've taken it from literally just the bare chassis with the engineers to driving and doing all the development work on the engine, the gearbox, the drivetrain, and of course then bolting the bodywork on, and have driven this car right from the beginning. It is phenomenal. It's a Formula One car. It's V12, 1,000 horsepower. I think capable to probably qualify towards the front end of the grid at Le Mans tomorrow, if we were there. So, and yet it's a track day car, so it's got a great window in terms of chassis and setup. You can drive with 600 horsepower, and you can take it right up to 1,000 horsepower and just gain your experience and gain your, let's say, confidence in the car. It's carbon brakes, as I say, 2,000 kilos of downforce. So it generates an awful lot of grip at high speed, and it's a beautiful bit of kit, and it's been an absolute privilege to be part of it, and it'd be great to drive some of you around tomorrow, and hopefully you get to hear this fantastic V12. It sounds very similar to what a Formula One car sounded like 5 or 6 years ago, when, you know, Formula One was very exciting to not only listen to but to watch. And this is just a part of that history. I would say probably one of the last really thoroughbred hypercars that we're going to see produced, maybe potentially.
Andy, this one's louder. Sorry. If you don't mind, you know, we've got this one as the racing car, and then you guys also have a road car version, which you've presumably done lots of development driving in. Can you just briefly describe the differences dynamically between those two cars?
Yeah, so obviously the road car is just a phenomenal bit of kit, fully active suspension, fully active aero, but it's ultimately on a road tire. And it's for the, you know, it is for the roads. Obviously, you could take it on the circuit and it would be phenomenal, where this has been purely produced for the racetrack. It, as I say, it could qualify on the front row of the grid tomorrow at Le Mans. It's the most phenomenal track car I've ever driven. I was test driver in Formula One for BMW Sauber in 2007, 2008. And it takes me back to those days of single seaters. Huge, reactive car, very, very high downforce. And it's just almost as fast as you can go to get your mind processor speed up with the vehicle and what it's capable of. But the 001 is a phenomenal bit of kit. That is taking, again, hypercar for the roads to a whole new level. And obviously, we're going to see that car out and about. But this is really designed purposely just for the racetrack.
I am excited. I'm going to beg you guys both for a ride. Maybe I'll even get it. We've got some charity rides to give away tomorrow, and that should be really exciting. And what number do we text? Anybody? Who knows? 41444. We're texting Hyper to that. But I want to talk about some other Aston Martins as well. You've got a V8 Vantage F1 edition over there, which is a lovely car. And are we going to be taking some people out in that? Are we having Stig laps in the Vantage? How are we arranging that?
We're definitely going to do some Stig laps in that.
Yes.
So the Vantage.
What's it worth to you guys?
The Vantage will be here for the weekend, the F1 Vantage, 527 horsepower, 0 to 60 in about 3.4, 3.5 seconds. And just, I heard Ben selling it today. Well, I wasn't supposed to be in earshot, but I was listening to Ben sell the car. And it just is a complete daily driver GT car. It's just a wonderful car to drive. So easy, so relaxed. And then you put it into track mode and it becomes a little bit of a beast, but it's still super, super functional everyday daily driver in that gorgeous matte green color. So definitely. But it's a... Hey, you and I talked last night, Matt. It's a super exciting time to be with Aston Martin. I've been here for about 7 months, 27 years in the car industry.
Aston Martin owners, who's got an Aston Martin out there? Anybody? One, two, three. I've got one. I love it. It is a stick. Yeah. I love owning an Aston Martin. I love being part of Team Aston Martin. It feels like this sort of perpetual underdog brand, but the cars have so much character. They always sound so good. They're always fun and comfortable and pretty. You know, it's a great car to own and bring out in the world.
Thank you, Matt. And that gives me a great segue just to introduce two of my guys who are here. We have Mark Gauntlett, who's UK VIP sales, will host customers in Gaydon in our factory in England. We have Brian Clark, who's the North America VIP sales guy. And both Brian and Mark will be around all weekend. They'll be with this car. They'll be available to talk to all of you guys. But I'm very aspirational that a lot more of us are going to become Aston Martin owners, to be candid. That's clearly an ambition. But the brand's in probably... And again, these guys have a lot more history. I've been here 7 months. But in 109 years, the brand's probably in the best place it's ever been. We now, I think, probably for the first time ever, have a clear product lifecycle development plan. So by 2024, 2025, we'll have three new front-engine sports cars. The car you see there will be refreshed heavily. We'll have a mid-engine supercar, a Valhalla. We'll have Valkyrie on the streets as well, and we'll have SUV. And we're just literally launching a new SUV, 707 PS, 0 to 60. The unofficial times, I'll quote you, 2.94 to 60, 7 flat to 100, and just about tops out at 194. The car is amazing. It's a sports car technology in an SUV, and I've never driven anything like it. So we're launching that car anytime now. So I'm talking about a brand now that has a portfolio, has a plan. And whilst we may be an underdog, we're happy that we're a speeding up underdog.
It is a good time to be at Aston indeed.
Thank you.
So bring your paint chips over to that table. They'll match them up. Yeah. Go find something fun to paint your Aston Martin. And how many of these are we making? How many Valkyries do we have?
We're going to, of the race car, 40.
40 race cars and how many road cars?
I'm just looking to my right to make sure I've got 175 of the coupes and 150 of the coupes. I got it wrong, my guys here. That's why I have them, you see. 150 of the coupes and Roadster, 85, but which are sold out.
Yeah, we need a Roadster version of this. I mean, because it seems so safe.
Mark's looking at me like I'm some sort of moron. It's actually called a spider, so yeah.
If you buy one, do you get an Andy? I mean, it seems like you need one. I don't know what I would. What would you do with this?
I think I would text Hyper to 41444 and see if you get an Andy.
Well, I'm really excited to see this thing in motion and hear it. The videos on your phone, the videos on his phone alone are wild of the way this thing accelerates and sounds and revs. It does look and sound like Formula One.
It really is.
It's what is the size limit? This is an important question.
Matt, we'll get
this
you in.
This is an
we'll
important question.
We'll
not just for me. I'm asking on behalf of all.
The best way to answer that question is that our executive chairman is a big human being. He's probably 6'4", 6'5". Probably, I'm not going to say that because I'll get quoted and I won't be here next week, but he's a big guy. And he got in and out of the car, importantly. Andy.
Yeah, he did. He got in. I knew he was in there. But yeah, he did. He had, in fact, he's been with Aston Martin for 16 years. Yeah. And he said that was the best highlight of his career there. I mean, he was a part of the design of this car. But I think it truly blows you away what it's capable of. If you've ever got the chance to drive a Formula One car at a Grand Prix, it's similar levels of performance.
That's just wild.
Yeah. It's something that will blow you away.
Before, we're going to actually open the floor if anyone has questions about this car or other Astons for Adam and Andy. But we grazed right over it, but I just want to circle right back to Valhalla.
Yes, sir.
Which is coming out soon, year 24.
Yeah.
Give me the quick top-level rundown on that car, because it's still crazy. It's not normal car. It's a crazy car.
So that's probably hypercar for supercar money. So we're talking around $950 million. Less than 1,000 cars will be produced. 950 horsepower, 0 to 60, 2.5 seconds, 2,500 pounds weight. So a phenomenal car. It really is a hypercar for supercar money. And we are working hard on that project right now. The car was at Pebble Beach last year without, just as a clay. We'll have the car this year at Pebble Beach with an interior as well, so people will be able to feel what the car is going to be like inside. There'll be lots of elements of Valkyrie. There's lots of learnings from Valkyrie in that car. But super exciting to bring a mid-engine sports car, a supercar, to Aston Martin as well.
Amazing. Anyone out there have questions about this or other Astons? Back here. Hang on. I'm coming down.
No. I'll just ask real loud. Is there any possible timeline that'll be on the track tomorrow? Because I do not want to miss that.
Ooh, the question is, what time will this car be on? You'll hear it. You'll know. You'll hear it at the Quail, actually. It'll. Do we have this?
Starts at 9 a.m.
9 a.m. start. Four or five sessions throughout. There's dedicated Valkyrie sessions.
Yeah, the Valkyries will be on, because of the speed and pace of the car, the Valkyries will be on together, but not with other cars. But they'll run four or five times through the day. So main message is, if you're going to be at Laguna Seca tomorrow or Sunday, you're there for a decent while. You're going to see both cars.
Yeah. But, you know, the first is always the best, right?
Yeah. You're running lead follow with my Cadillac.
Do the road car and the track car share the same chassis?
Yeah, the same engine, lots of similar parts, but the main difference is the weight that the hydraulics and the KERS unit have in the road car are not needed with the downforce on the race car. Andy?
Yeah, that's correct. And also chassis, this is fully FIA approved in terms of safety for Le Mans and for the WEC. So it's a different chassis, but very similar. The genes of the car are the same. Engine capacity, and obviously the aerodynamics, there's a similarity there as well. Yep.
Well, Adam, Andy, thank you so much for your time. I'm sorry we're not going to see you at the track tomorrow, but Andy, I will be following you around like a little puppy, begging for a ride. Go ahead.
Sorry, Matt, one last thing. Having sat on two children's charity boards in Atlanta in my 6 years there, I'm always humbled and think it's amazing the work that these guys do. So I'm going to remind you one last time, Hyper41444, please donate. It's an amazing, amazing charity, and thank you for everything you do.
And thanks to Alessandro and the Hypercar team for... You got something else? Mandatory 8 a.m. driver's meeting in the paddock. If you are driving on the track tomorrow, it is mandatory. Be there. And thanks to everybody. Thanks to Aston, Roger Dubuis, all the other sponsors, Make-A-Wish, the Hypercar team. This is a phenomenal event. I'm really impressed with the organization so far. It's been a great time. And keep it safe on the track tomorrow. Don't go crazy in turn one, session one. Keep it light. And enjoy your dinner, everybody. Thanks.